That tranquil, unruffled drift from Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees signals that it's 10 o'clock Thursday night. And time for So What's Your Story, the only storytelling show originating in Houston on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. The coolest place on your dial where we spotlight a variety of tellers from starters to stars who share at least one thing in common. Each is an exceptional person who take us on a profound, perhaps even fanciful journey with remarkable stories, from heart-rending narratives to enchanting folktales, and then return us safely to the present. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown, and along with Roxy Russell out there, charged with working the board and stepping in just a bit. You know, the stuff of stories often contains the experiences collected by people when we turn our heads for a moment, and that moment becomes our life. Stories document our lives, or at least offers of guidance on how to live them. And stories arouse the heart, rendering wondrous, highly motivating lessons about faith, wisdom, and values, all swirling around in story form, beckoning us to grab the ones that best fit the way we live or choose to live. The clergy, storytellers incarnate, know that stories work as creative conduits to meaningful lessons. And tonight, we will explore the spiritual side of storytelling with someone who I believe can eloquently illuminate on the story-faith connection. Reverend Ernie Turney has been the senior pastor at Bering Memorial Unit United Methodist Church in Houston since 2008. He was raised in East Texas, attended Tyler Junior College, and then graduated with a BA from Stephen F. Austin, followed by a master's in theology from SMU. Ernie is a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild and a great sport. I have to tell you, I sent him home one night during the fund drive because we kind of had some miscommunication. And before he left, he wrote out a check to support this show. That's the kind of guy he is, a great sport and very generous. Ernie, thank you for being here. Finally, right? You told your congregation you're here, so they're all listening in. Last time we had to send out an APB saying, sorry, Reverend Turney won't be on, so don't listen. But today we're all set.
It's all good. It's all great. Thanks, Hank. I'm glad to be here.
You ever get ribbed because of your last name rhyming your first name?
People kind of do a double take.
When, they do?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they think.
What do they say? Like, are you joking?
Well, they have the look on their face like, you're pulling a joke. Or
right. It's like you're related to Jack Spratt or Jack
something like
or
that.
Something.
Yeah. Well, I tell them I Googled me about 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm the only one. And then they really don't know what to do with that. But it's
Ernie,
okay.
The most effective clergy that I know, regardless of religion or denomination, use storytelling to augment their sermons and ultimately enrich the spiritual lives of their congregants. What makes stories such a powerful force in preaching?
Stories are what people remember. It's the thing that can hold all the points. It's the thing that if they get past lunch, they may not remember anything else you said, but they may remember the story, and that may take them back to the scripture or to the lesson of the day or whatever it is that we're trying to do.
And you use stories oftentimes,
at least as much as we can.
As much as you can. And so much of religion is based on stories, really. When we think about religion, we think about the ideological narratives that are associated with them. Now, the first story on your personal agenda is the introduction to an excerpt from Elie Wiesel's The Gates of the Forest, and I just wanted to very briefly share the essence of this riveting novel for our listeners who've never read it. Gregor, a teenage boy, is the protagonist. He's a lone survivor of his family, and he's hiding from the Germans in the forest. He then hides in the village, posing as a deaf, mute peasant boy. He searches for God in a world he feels God has abandoned, and we journey through the ghost-like inner world of a survivor. Ernie, share this beautiful piece with us, please.
This is the introduction that Elie Wiesel shares. When the Rabbi Israel, the Baal Shem Tov, saw misfortune threatening the Jews, it was his certain custom to go into a certain part of the forest to meditate. There he would light a fire, say a special prayer, and the miracle would be accomplished. Later, when his disciple, the celebrated Medrich, had occasion for the same reason to intercede with heaven, he would go to the same place in the forest and say, O Master of the Universe, listen, I do not know how to light the fire, but I am able to say the prayer, and again the miracle would be accomplished. Still later, when the Rabbi Moshe Leib of Sassof, in order to save his people once more, would go into the forest and say, "I do not know how to light the fire. I do not know how to say the prayer, but I know the place, and this must be sufficient." It was sufficient, and the miracle was accomplished. Then it fell to the Rabbi Israel to overcome the misfortune. Sitting in his armchair, his head in his hands, he spoke to God, "I am unable to light the fire. I do not know the prayer. I cannot even find the place in the forest. All I can do is tell the story, and this must be sufficient." And it was sufficient. And then Wiesel adds to the stories of the rabbis, "God made man because he loves stories."
Beautiful. That's beautiful. My grandmother always taught me that what's truer than truth? The story. And I could never fully understand what that meant, but that reinforces it. Why this selection? Why did you want to share this one with us?
Well, to come on a storytelling time, I think it was appropriate to say there's reasons we tell stories, and those are important reasons. And for some, it's nice to hear that they're not only important to us, they're important to God.
Yeah.
It's part of what I think the Book of Psalms does for us. It tells the joys and the terrible sadness, and God listens.
Yeah, and I think that is so true. One of the things that stories do, we've had other clergy on this show, and I think that they would probably agree to this, is that we live in a very tumultuous world, obviously. And for me, I'll just speak for myself, when I think about stories, I think about how much chaos there is, and stories somehow bring beauty to it. I know that sounds very strange, but I think you know what I'm talking about. It just makes sense. I listen to a story, I understand why the tumult occurs. I listen to a story, I have a better understanding about loss. I listen to a story, I have a better understanding about grief. I feel more hopeful. I feel things because these stories give me an opportunity to think and ponder and to feel. And I think for that alone, it's a really important ingredient. This is Dr. Hank and Roxy Russell, and you are listening to The Spiritual Side of Storytelling with guest teller Reverend Ernie Turney, senior pastor of Bering Memorial United Methodist Church on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM. Ernie, now why do you tell stories? I mean, that's a little bit different from what stories do, but why do you tell stories? As a clergy, what do you want to accomplish with the stories that you tell?
Well, it keeps the memories alive. One of the things. It's the way we remember things. You do it via a story, and it will live past the initial part. But it also tells us who we are. And it's always interesting to read other stories from other cultures and from other times and from other people, and to discover in those stories that they're just like us.
Now, we had you just read that beautiful segment from Gates for us, and I wanted to share a few other quotes from that story and ask you what you think they mean. "A man can laugh while he suffers." That comes from the novel. What does that mean?
Oh, that's a really good question. It means that no matter what our circumstance is, that there will be times that we can go ahead and laugh anyway, and sometimes that's all we can do. Yeah. I'm old enough to remember when Kennedy was assassinated, Tip O'Neill, who had just taken his place in Congress, said, "We will laugh again, but we will never be young again."
Yeah.
And it was hard in that moment on that Saturday to even think about laughing.
Yeah, you know, and we talk about suffering. I was sharing with you earlier, right before the show, when Rabbi Sam Karf was on here, and he's a rabbi emeritus at Congregation Beth Israel. And he did a program on messianic moments. And, of course, what he did was to talk about how stories teach us about these messianic moments. And watching these messianic moments gives us an opportunity to share those beautiful episodes with others. And the story that he shared, and I'll share it with you again and our listeners, is that he took his wife to the hospital one night. And this is something that he shared on this show as well. And he went into the emergency room and he looked around and he saw people of all different colors, all different shapes, all different ages, all different kinds of socioeconomic status. And he sits there, and after about 10 minutes, he notices people start talking with each other. There's some kind of connection. And then when one person gets up, going over to the vending machine to get some coffee, he might turn to a veritable stranger who was sitting right next to him and saying, listen, can I get you a cup of coffee, without even knowing her name. And then a few minutes later, when a nurse comes out and says, your husband is well, your husband is doing okay, some stranger will say to that woman, I'm so glad your husband is doing well. Now, these people that don't know each other, and the rabbi would talk about the fact that when you look at their nonverbal manifestations, you look at their eyes, you listen to their voice, you know they're true, you know they're real. And the idea of capturing that in your own heart and soul and being able to share that with others is, in his mind, a messianic moment. It's an example of how we take a look at these human narratives, and even in the face of suffering and human suffering, we can smile and we can see things that might be hopeful. My grandmother always used to tell the story to me about how they would tell stories in concentration camp in order to entertain each other and to give each other hope.
Oh, yes, yeah. because it's the one thing that they can't take away from you is your story.
Oh, yeah.
And it also reminds us that we are not alone.
Absolutely.
Because in the telling of the story, there are listeners, and then stories usually beget other stories.
That's a great point. They really do. They really do manifest into others. You know, another great quote from The Gates of the Forest is, we're alone, but we are capable of communicating to one another both our loneliness and our desires to break through it. You say, I'm alone, and someone answers, I'm alone too. It's that human connection, isn't it? It's that sense of empathy.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Or sometimes the word is, I am here and you are not alone.
You are not
but
alone.
We are here together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And though we may not be able to see each other, you know the presence is there.
Yeah, I'm just speculating here, but I know that as a preacher, you run into many lonely people, and I would imagine that loneliness has got to be one of the absolute worst possible feelings.
Yes, and people live with a tremendous amount of loneliness, and they are also alone.
Yeah.
And there's those are two different things.
Yeah.
But yes, it's palpable with some people. It's just amazing.
Ernie, you have a story entitled A Monster Named Who, and we talked about The Gates of Forest after you read it. Let's go in reverse this time. What's it about? Tell us the lesson briefly, and then share that wonderful story with us, please.
Okay. I would say the lesson is, what happens when you face your fears?
I like it.
Okay. Once, there was a monster named Who that lived in the land called Polite. Now, Who was a relatively nice monster, as monsters go. He had never done anything wrong, but neither had he done anything right. Being a dragon-type monster, he couldn't coo and didn't bite, and his skin was ultra-sensitive, so he could not go out in the daytime or where there was light. So the only time Who roamed was in the darkest darks of the darkest nights. The people in the town got glimpses of a monster, and some became afraid. And they began to talk and tell tales, and the tales got bigger and bolder and more scary, until the time that they decided they had to do something because there was a monster in their midst and they needed to rid themselves of it. So a committee of self-appointed citizens set out to rid themselves of this terrible thing. And they found a deep, dark cave far below the ground. And as they approached, they found the monster. But Who smiled, because it had been a very long time since he had had a visitor. The fear in the people mounted, and some quietly trembled. Who stood up as they came near, and they were all amazed at his dignified manner, although no one uttered a sound. Such a magnificent warmth of love radiated from Who that all were dumbfounded, except for a few mumbled prayers. After a while, the men smiled too, and then one by one they went away. Both Who and the men felt happy, although they did not understand exactly how or why. Not a word had been spoken. Since that day, not a single soul has ventured into the cave. No one has seen Who. He is still there, waiting for the next generation to return. And they will come. They will come when the rumors grow black and ugly, and someone will seek to confront the thing in life that they fear. And just as surely as they crawl down into the deep dark cave, who will be there? And when they come into his presence, once again he will stand and radiate that magnificent warmth of love and conquer their fear, just as it did long ago in the land called Polite.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful story, Ernie. Thank you. And you know, you said a few minutes ago how one story sort of spawns another. When you were telling that story, you're talking about facing fears. I couldn't help thinking about the farmer who woke up in the morning and looked out into his pasture and realized he had all of these beautiful, beautiful crops, and he was terrified because the animals might come out and eat them and ruin them. So he set traps and fences. And he placed little poisonous pellets all over the place to make sure that they wouldn't dare ruin his beautiful, beautiful pasture. And he came out, and in fact, there were no animals around. And he looked and he looked, and he realized that there were no sounds around. There wasn't anything happening. And he became a little sad. Months passed, and he walked out one day, and he went out to the pasture, and he removed all of these poisonous pellets, and he removed the fences and all of these traps, and he raised his hand and he looked out into the pasture and he said, "Animals, you are allowed here. I promise. I want you here. I'm lonely." And the animals looked at him and said, "Now we can certainly not go near because we're afraid of his scarecrow." Right.
Wonderful.
And I always think of that story because, but again, thanks to you, I hadn't, but it just spawned the whole notion of fear. It's fear and being afraid of things. Being afraid of things does render the kind of loneliness that you talked about earlier, the kind of loneliness that we just have to get rid of.
And that story is not everyone's story. My experience, one of my themes of experience when I'm afraid of something, when I usually confront it, it disappears. It's the things that I don't expect that are the things that walk in that make me frightened more than the things that I'm afraid of that I can see coming. So that may not be everyone's story, but that's the one. And Stephen Crane said the same thing at the end of Red Badge of Courage when he said, "I looked into the face of the great death, and it was only the great death."
That's right.
And then the fear went away.
Right. Wonderful. Beautiful. Great banter. I love that. Ernie, you've got another story that's entitled, what was it? Well, Don't Steal My Story.
Don't Steal My Story. This is a story that is in a short story by Sherman Alexie. The title of the short story is South by Southwest in the book The Toughest Indian in the World. And what's happening is there is a man on the reservation who has decided to go to the Grand Canyon. He is tired of living on the res. And so his name is Seymour. And the only thing he has is a car and a gun with no bullets. So he is on his way to Grand Canyon. And it says, a family pulled up in the car. Seymour pointed the gun at the family. Here, the father said. Take all my money and go. I don't want your money, says Seymour. I want to know how you met. I want to know how you fell in love. But that's our story, said the father. You can't steal it. Tell me, he shouted. And he grabbed one of the children and put the empty gun against the child's head. Please, said the mother. My husband was somebody else's husband when we met. I never told him I loved him. I didn't want to break up his marriage. I never told him I loved him. I just loved him, and I hoped it was enough. And it was. And it was. They divorced. And he called me 3 days later, and he asked me to marry him. We'd never been on a date. But he asked me to marry him. We'd never done anything but talk in the copy room, and he asked me to marry him. And I knew it was crazy, but I married him, and we've been married for 15 years. How does that happen? Seymour asked. He pushed the son back toward his parents. It happens all the time, says the father. You just never hear about it. No, 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 said Seymour. People don't love each other like that anymore.
Hey, that's a shame. What a beautiful, that's perfect. A Valentine's treat.
Almost,
Ernie?
Yes.
That's a Valentine's treat. We didn't even know about
didn't
that.
Didn't think it was coming.
Roxy, your boyfriend is here, right?
Yes,
Todd,
he is.
The Todd man is here from
Atlanta.
Yes,
he is. Yes,
from
he is.
Snowtown, USA.
Snowocalypse.
Snowocalypse, right. It's just snowing down in Atlanta. And that's what we love about the South.
Yes.
Right, all that wonderful, wonderful snow. I know. This is So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with Roxy Russell. And you are enjoying the spiritual side of storytelling conveyed by Reverend Ernie Turney, senior pastor of Bering United Methodist Church. Roxy, it's certainly the best way to learn how to tell stories is to listen to this kind of a show, of course. But, you know, if there are other kinds of things that we can do, why don't you tell us what we can do to learn some stories? Because we've got some interesting people out there.
Well, they need to attend the monthly story swap, which is held by the Storytellers Guild. And it's just go to their monthly meetings held on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the St. Andrew's House located on 1811 Heights Boulevard. And check out the Houston Storytellers Guild site at www.HoustonStorytellersGuild.org for all the fun happenings. And visit us on So What's Your Story's Facebook page for great information about storytelling, and please like us on your way out.
You bet. That's storytellers.org. Absolutely. And thanks, Roxy. You know, February's meeting of the Guild is this Tuesday, and I really want to see a bunch of you out there. Of course, our tip for the teller segment designed to answer your questions about storytelling is another way to pick up a few pointers about telling stories. And Roxy, what do we have tonight?
Hank, we have Lainey from Missouri City says that she absolutely loves the show and really loves your voice.
Of course.
She wants to know what a storyteller should think about just before telling a story to help reduce nervousness.
Well, clearly thinking about my voice would probably help. Thank you, Lainey. I can't speak, but thank you for my voice. All right. That's a great question. You know, nervousness is good. Or else you wouldn't care, Lainey. So it's okay to be a little bit nervous. You don't want to be paralyzing. I did talk about mental imaging on this show before, and I think it's worth talking about it again because it's really the best thing you can do. Mental imaging is a tried and true method when the teller thinks about the emotions that he or she wants to solicit from listeners. Tears, laughter, intensity, fear, hope. The teller envisions those nonverbal clues which demonstrate that the story is working. You see it, and then you do it. The results, though not yet real, are oftentimes too good to pass up. Now, ultimately, the teller makes it happen. Not always, of course, but more often than you might think. I also, personally, I like thinking about the scene in Walk the Line, that great film with Phoenix, who played Johnny Cash. A very wonderful autobiographical piece. And at relatively close to the beginning of the film, Johnny Cash and his band is going into his, what will be his manager's office. And he plays for him. And his manager looks at Johnny Cash and his band and says, you know, this is nothing. You guys are just mediocre. This is nothing. And Johnny Cash is kind of upset and asks him, well, what do you want to hear? I mean, we're singing our hearts out here. And the manager says, Mr. Cash, let me tell you what I want to hear. I want you to play like you're laying in the gutter, that you're near death, and somebody's walking up to you and saying, Johnny, if this is your last song, your last breath, your last word, your last message, what would it sound like? That's what I want you to play, Mr. Cash. I want you to play that song just like it's your absolute last. I want you to play it passionately. I want you to play it artistically. I want you to feel it, and then I want you to sing it. That's what I want to hear. That's music. And, of course, that's when Johnny Cash is singing Walk the Line, and it was just a magnificent segment. And I think about that a lot because I think that's exactly what good storytellers have to do. They have to hear it, they have to own it, they have to feel it, and then ultimately execute it. Thank you, Lainey. That's a great question. We get some great questions. We really do. And I appreciate your interest. And thank you very much for liking my voice. I don't blame you. Only kidding, only kidding, only kidding. Roxy, tell the folks in our fair city what they need to do to speak directly to this awesome and sexy voice, please.
Oh, brother. Well, if you have a question for Dr. Hank or would like to be a guest on So What's Your Story, send your questions or story ideas to ruby.story@gmail.com. Now that is ruby.story@gmail.com, and we will get back to you.
Thank you so much, Roxy. That was so nice. And thank you, everybody out there. Valentine's Day is coming up. Roxy, your boyfriend's here, and that's great. And you got plans. He's a chef, so he's making dinner.
Yes, he is.
Right?
Yes, he is.
Very, very good. Now, I have a question for you, Ernie. You said before in your story that people don't fall in love that way. In just about a minute or so, tell us what that means. Why don't people fall in love with it? Why do they fall in love that way?
Oh, I think they do. I just think he couldn't buy the story.
Uh-huh.
He couldn't steal the story. If they gave him a story he couldn't steal.
That's right. Yeah.
And so I thought that was what was so interesting about it.
Now you also say that stories are sacred, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean, that stories are sacred?
They transform us. They convert us. When you hear a story that tells your story, your salvation has come near.
Wow.
Can I finish with my last little short one?
Do. We have just about, can you do it in about 45 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay.
A mouse found his way into the corn crib, and it was like a combination of Luby's and Fort Knox, and he ate, and he ate, and he ate, and he ate, and then he got ready to leave, but he was too big to get through the hole, and so he had to wait until he lost all his weight, until he could go back out again. And what's the good of having to go out exactly the same way as you came in?
Great. What a great parable.
Yes.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. I'm glad we got that. And Ernie, I'm so grateful for you and your stories and your spiritual insight. Your congregation at Bering Memorial United Methodist is a fortunate lot, I have to tell you. Thank you for you being here, really. I hope you don't mind it if we invite you back, huh?
Love
one
to.
Of these days.
It'd be fun.
Roxy, thank you, as always, for keeping it fresh. Eddie Goss, who's been a guest before, is going to be here next week with a remarkable story to help celebrate Black Heritage Month. And until then, keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Scooter is up next with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday, and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Be good to each other. Happy Valentine's Day. Get gifts, not presents. Toaster ovens don't count. I'm Dr. Hank reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after.
Amen.
Good night.